Hey, we're going around Europe on today's podcast. English Premier League, Serie A, Bundesliga and Spain's La Liga. We also have World Cup qualifying, the Champions League, and Sir Alex Ferguson gives the hairdryer treatment in his autobiography. This and much more podcast banter. We're on the ball. And we're on the ball this week. We have tons of stuff to talk about, that, which you just heard about in my very intro. This week, me and Gio are joined by West again. West, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm excited about this week's commentary.
Lots of fun news to come on the Ball Soccer podcast. West is wearing his Chelsea shirt. He can get onto that and talk about how happy he is.
And we had a little victory today.
You guys did, absolutely.
Set the group right.
Manchester United play tomorrow, so by the time people listen to this pod, man, you might have lost or won. Well, or draw, I guess. But hopefully they win. Only one place to start. We have a lot to get through this week. English Premier League, results from the weekend, of course. Arsenal, we have to start with them. 4-1 winners at the Emirates, where they met Norwich. Mesut Ozil with two. Jack Wilshere and the in-form Aaron Ramsey with the goals. Interestingly enough, Jack Wilshere's goal against Norwich was his first in the Premier League at the Emirates Stadium. And after his strike at West Brom, his first competitive Premier League games. So, there we go. Did you get to see the game? And what did you think of Arsenal?
Oh, I mean, they just continue to be an unstoppable force in the Premier League. Giroud didn't score in that game, did he?
No, he didn't, yeah.
But, I mean, even without him scoring in the game, I mean, they were still just unstoppable. Ramsey is as in form as anybody right now, along with Ozil. But I can't wait to talk a little about the Champions League and how they're playing like versus the Premier League. Especially, I mean, just after today. But
yeah, that's right, because they play Dortmund today, which we'll get onto. If people haven't seen the goals from Arsenal's game, check them out. I mean, all the goals were phenomenal pieces of play. Watching, dare I say it, Barcelona, or watching, I thought it was 2003 all over again, and Arsenal were playing some breathtaking taking stuff, and it'd be amazing if they keep this run of form going.
I mean, they definitely have the firepower to do it. Like I said, I mean, they did that without Giroud scoring. And, I mean, what is he? I know he's in the top in the scoring.
Yeah.
I think he has three goals. Ramsey has four, something like that, so.
Yeah, no, we'll see about Arsenal's next few games. Obviously, they play Dortmund today. I believe their next Champions League game's against Napoli. They also play Manchester United, inform Southampton. So we're going to see over this next one of games.
Champions League, I think, because they're going to be away on the next two, right, I believe?
I think so, yeah.
They're away. After they play Dortmund this time, they're away.
And Napoli.
And Napoli, so. Yeah. We'll see how they play away from home.
We'll see. And if I think once we're really going to see how great Arsenal are going to be this season once they get maybe a bad run of form, which pretty much happens every season to at least every team. You get like a dip in form, at least at the top.
Yeah.
And we'll see if they get any injuries too.
I mean, obviously if you pull out the draws as opposed to taking losses. So we'll see how that goes.
We'll see. Arsenal. Yeah, we definitely will. Defeat for Norwich, of course. The win keeps Arsenal top of the league by 2 points. Chelsea, who are leading the chase behind them, fought back from a goal down to thump Cardiff. After scoring an equaliser, which should not have stood. The brilliantly named Munch with the goal for Cardiff before goals from Samuel Eto'o, two for Eden Hazard, and then Oscar, much like Ramsey for Arsenal, keeping up his great early season form. Jose Mourinho, interestingly enough, was sent to the stands to sit amongst the fans by the fourth official. What did you make of the Chelsea-Norwich game and Mourinho and the Eto'o situation?
Well, going back to the Norwich goal, kind of shows why Mourinho has his doubts about David Luiz. It was an error. Just let the back pass go back. Wasn't sure if Cech was there.
That's
or not.
Right. Yeah.
And then Munch dropped all over it. I mean, I think Mourinho had a point before getting thrown off. I mean, they were really like stalling. The tactics. They were really trying to hold the game up and stuff like that. So I mean, I think he had a point. It was funny when you watch the Champions League when you go to the Champions League game today, they tried to, I mean, there were accusations of Chelsea doing the same thing, trying to slow up the game and hold up play and not getting the ball out and stuff like that. But Chelsea looked good. They're coming together better. They're starting to come good. Obviously, we still don't have just like the out-and-out striker that we need. We have so much creativity around the pitch and up top that we don't need that. We need somebody up there that's just going to clean things up, and I think we have that. I mean, Eto'o's goal was...
Should it have stood? Letter of the law?
Not, but I was just talking about his skill.
Okay.
The skill that he used to make the goal.
Yeah.
That I was very impressed with, and it seemed like he's getting kind of more comfortable getting his legs, playing in the Premier League, and that was happy to see that goal going, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's good to see, you know, even if the goal shouldn't have stood, it was good ambition for him to just at least attempt it. Shows his mind is clearly on the game and getting the goal for Chelsea. Yeah. That was his first, right?
Yeah, that was the first.
So we will see another stat for you. Petr Cech was making his 300th Premier League appearance for Chelsea, but could not keep what would have been his 146th. Clean sheet. Munch's goal for Cardiff was the 220th to have been scored past Petr Cech in the league since he moved to Stamford Bridge in 2004. How's that for a whopping stat? So 220 goals he's let in 300 games. It's not bad, is it?
Not bad.
He's done brilliantly, Cech, obviously, almost 10 years now at Chelsea.
Yeah.
How time...
You're going strong.
Yeah, how time flies. Quick note on Cardiff. I know some people would have heard about this, some people wouldn't have. Cardiff fire their head of recruitment, a guy called Ian Moody, and he's replaced by Vincent Tan, the owner's son's best friend. I don't know if we mentioned this on the pod last week. So the owner is a guy called Vincent Tan. His son's best friend had an internship there, I think, and 6 months ago was painting part of the stadium, and now he's the head of the recruitment of Cardiff. I mean, remarkable. This guy's... this Vincent Tan, I mean, he's... Look, Cardiff came up. They're promoted. He did put money in. But then you have the other side. Okay, he changed the color of the kit from blue to red because red's more, I guess, for promotion, I guess, in China. Obviously, it's a very important color.
Yeah.
And, there were rumors coming out maybe he'll change the name from Cardiff City to Cardiff Dragons and... this kind of stuff. And now he makes his son's best mate the head of recruitment. I mean, it's an unbelievable story. And I mean, Cardiff are doing decently well, I guess, in the Premier League. But this kind of thing is just, I mean...
It's one of those things when I think... I mean, I don't know if I'm the person to judge his sincerity and for why he's taken over a club or not. But a lot of them are just toys. They're games. And so...
Yeah.
These positions aren't as important. So they're just
billionaires
like,
playthings.
Yeah, it's just the billionaire's toys. Oh, I can afford a EPL team, so I'll just, have my son in there, maybe his best friend, Hey, what do you like soccer? Do you think you can do that? Okay, yeah, come on,
Yeah.
And so, it's just his toy, and he has the money to blow, and I guess he can do what he wants. I mean, he obviously wasn't looking for experience.
I know, 23-year-old best mate.
Yeah, I mean, it probably won't be as fun if they get relegated. Then maybe he'll take it a little more seriously and find some qualified candidates for the recruiting.
So we wish Cardiff luck there. Good sign. Malky Mackay's a good coach. Also, obviously, my favourite topic, Manchester United. Manager David Moyes endured another afternoon of frustration as Southampton snatched a last grasp equaliser to stun Old Trafford. Van Persie with the goal for Man U. Lallana for Southampton, another... I believe he's English as well. Another youngster coming through. I don't know why people are complaining that English youngsters aren't. Yanazai, again. Yeah, showing glimpses of absolute.
It was from him to Rooney. And then
that's right.
Rooney with the shot bounced back
Van
to
Persie.
Van Persie. Yeah,
that's right. But he definitely looks like. I mean, this is high praise and very early. Definitely has that Cristiano Ronaldo factor. If you ask any Man U fan that witnessed Ronaldo's debut, was very skinny, very slight, had pace, could pass, could shoot, and Yanazai has got all those things. So, but Manchester United are struggling again.
I mean, they were a bit wasteful up top.
They hit the bar, I think, twice.
I know. Van Persie and Rooney, I both believe hit the bar.
So. Oh, yeah, hit the bar. Sorry, United remain eighth in the table, while Southampton continue their impressive start to the season and stay in fifth.
They're fifth.
I mean, this we don't surely expect Southampton to remain in this position. This tends to happen. I mean, I remember, wasn't it Blackpool were fifth after like 10 games or something 2 years ago and still got relegated. So, I mean, these teams seem to do well at the start and then fade, really. Newcastle, obviously, a few years ago did very well at the start and then...
But say, I mean, they're only four points out of first place after eight games.
But do you remember they sacked their coach, Nigel Atkins, and everyone was like in uproar, like, oh, I can't believe you fired him. He got two back-to-back promotions. For Southampton. And this the Cortese family at Southampton, well, looks like they got it right.
Yeah.
Looks like they called it absolutely bang on. So well done to Southampton. Any more Premier League notes and tidbits you want to go through there, Wes?
I mean, yeah, there's always, I guess, Liverpool.
Liverpool, they drew at Newcastle.
Yeah, 2-2. Even though I think they spent almost half the game a man up. they were down to 10, and they still pulled a last minute. I think Sturridge rescued him in this. Well, it wasn't really a rescue. It was a 72nd minute with a goal set up by Suarez to tie it up against the 10-man Magpies, but... Interesting. I really thought, I mean, after they went up, but man, they should have destroyed them, especially with the combination of Suarez and Sturridge up top. I figured it'd be a cakewalk after that, but the Magpies put up a gallant fight to rescue some points.
Absolutely, and Man City obviously winning away from home. To end the Premier League segment, I know we have to keep saying it's very early days. Have you known a title race this wide open that you can't really call it?
I mean, that's what I was saying. Southampton and Everton, what are they, fifth and sixth, and they're only 4 points out? I mean, so that means in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, they could be
two weeks' time, they could be top of the league because they're 2 points behind Chelsea. So in 1 week, they can be in second place. I mean, it's wide open, but I see Chelsea's just creeping up, coming to form.
Wishful thinking.
I don't think they're coming to form. Schürrle is really starting to impress, and that's...
Didn't
awesome.
I think I earmarked him a few weeks ago. You were having doubts about
Schürrle. I was
Schürrle.
Definitely having doubts about Schürrle. And, man, he's proven me wrong. Oh. And I'm glad. I'm definitely glad he proved me wrong. And if we can get Eto or Torres, just somebody. I mean, I think Ba's probably completely out of the picture at this point. If one of them can just clean it up around the goal mouth, just be a poacher. Like, just off the rail, off the goalie. You know, deflections, if they can just put those in the back of the net, I think we have the scoring power from the midfield to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
To take it.
I completely forgot. I've got all my notes here in front of me. Completely forgot this game, and I can't believe I did. Tottenham Hotspur, the game against Crystal Palace, where they also won 4-1, and two of the goals were out of this world. Like, I got to tell you, bro. So let me try to paint this picture. You have the six-yard box. And this guy's on the side of it. So he's not in front of the goal. He's off to the side. The ball comes over top as he's running. And he just slings his leg at it. And it fires into like the top left-hand corner. It was the most amazing goal. Honestly, wow. Everybody has to check it out. They're saying it could be the best goal that's scored in the Premier League since 92. It was goal of the Premier League. It was fantastic. Sorry, I said Tottenham, didn't I? I meant Fulham. Fulham beat Crystal Palace. Sorry. I had London on my head, and then I had a team wearing white in my head, and it went to Spurs. But yeah, it was Fulham. And Martin Jol's been under pressure. They were
and just there was the Kasami goal as well, right?
Yeah, Kasami. Yeah, that was the goal scorer, marvelous goal. And former Chelsea and Reading man Steve Sidwell scored another worldie as well to make it 2-1. Crystal Palace were leading that game, and there is a few rumours flying about that Ian Holloway would be the second Premier League manager of the season sacked after Paolo Di Canio was sacked, obviously, the other week. So we'll see. Moving on to Serie A, we have to backtrack a little bit. Friday's game saw Janic, Silent P, I believe, scored twice as Serie A leaders Roma stretched their winning start to the league season to 8 games. Napoli had veteran defender and brother of a very famous footballer. Paulo Cannavaro was sent off during the match. Roma on a credible run, although Francesco Totti, who we spoke about in length last week, looks like he's out for a month. But Roma, wow, going strong. It's a very good, obviously, Napoli team that we've praised many times on this podcast.
Yeah, that game, was it Higuain? Or Hamsik Higuain really didn't show up, definitely. No. Hamsik, we were singing his praise so much early in the season. He did better in the Champions League game today, but they just really didn't show up. And I don't know if it's just, is Roma that good?
I think they just have personalities, I guess. I mean, they have hardworking personalities. They have Bradley, the American, obviously, in midfield. They have Daniel De Rossi, who's 31 now, and every summer was linked with £20 million moves to one team or another. Stayed there, is brilliant. They have Totti, who, yes, is almost 40, but is just incredible. What a leader, obviously, and to younger players as well, and to the whole team. So they're in a good position, Roma. I mean, they have Arsenal's best striker last season, Jovinia, up front. So who knows what's going to happen? No, but they're doing well.
Absolutely.
Champions Juventus were left stunned by a 15-minute former Manchester United manager Giuseppe Rossi hat-trick in 15 minutes against Florentina stormed back from 2-0 down at halftime to win 4-2. Tevez and again another former Manchester United midfielder, Paul Pogba, had given Juventus the lead. And then Rossi, who, if people don't know the story about Giuseppe Rossi, he's partly American.
Yeah.
And he joined Manchester United some years ago as a very young kid. Wasn't really given the opportunity. Maybe thought he was too small or too slight. Went away to Villarreal and got injured. Like, season after, he would get cruciate knee ligaments, all this stuff. Like, season upon season. I think now he's 25. He's getting on a bit in terms of how many years he's missed injury. But fantastic hat-trick. And in 15 minutes, brilliant. Joaquin, former Real Betis and Valencia man, bagged the points for Florentina. I remember him being one of my favorite players growing up. He was awesome. Defeat was Juventus' first in the league since February. Yeah. And their first in Florence for 15 years. Florentina are now up to sixth.
Oh, it's Roma, right?
Say it again.
Wait, it's their first loss to Roma in 15 years at home.
No.
No?
Juventus obviously losing to Florentina.
Oh, okay.
So it was their first league defeat since February, and their first defeat in Florentina, in Florence, for 15 years.
Right, okay.
Yeah, my bad. Florentina are now up to sixth, 15 points, whilst that defeat leaves Juventus third on goal difference, 5 points behind Roma. So there we go. That's your Serie A catch-up. And we had talked about the Roma-Napoli game, I remember, last week, saying what an important game it was, and Roma getting the win. Briskly, moving on to Ligue 1, because we haven't really talked about the French, dare I say it, Premier League. Two goals apiece from Edison Cavani and our favourite Zlatan Ibrahimovic against Bastia maintained Paris Saint-Germain's momentum in Ligue 1. I don't think the superlatives have run out, I guess, for Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
He's his own, like he says, he's his own man. Why be like anybody else? And he continues to do that. I mean, I still think he's, in my opinion, he's the best striker in the world.
In the world?
I mean, I'm sure people argue with it, but the man is, he's good. He's got the assist, he's got the finish. He's got the touch.
He's got that impressive championship winning record as well.
Yeah, the championship winning record. I mean, he can score any goal there is. Headers, volleys.
Bicycle kicks. Bicycle kicks.
I mean, he makes great goals. He makes the easy goals. He does it all. I mean,
yeah.
Built like a tank. It's just, he's the best striker in the world.
It's certainly impressive.
Out and out striker.
Out and out. That's a good one, yeah. Out and out striker. Sochio gave new coach Renard's hopes of saving them from Ligue 1 relegation a boost by earning a 2-2 draw against the other title contenders in Ligue 1, Monaco, after coming back from two goals down. With 10 games gone, Paris Saint-Germain atop with 24 points, while Monaco are 2 points behind in second. Now, I have to bring this up about Monaco. This week, there were Real Madrid's president, Florentino Perez, who tends to speak a lot about other people's players, is quoted, but in a reliable source, saying Falcao is a great player and I'm aware that he wants to play for Real Madrid. People are saying that maybe Falcao, the reason why he didn't go to Real Madrid after leaving Atletico was because why would Atletico sell their best player to their rivals? And now maybe Falcao sees Monaco as a stepping stone to move to Real Madrid. I mean, Falcao's got to be up there with Ibrahimovic as one of the best strikers in the world today. Is this kind of thing like a coming out like that a distraction?
I don't think it's a distraction. I think it's probably a ploy just to get Falcao thinking about Real Madrid coming back to Spain, playing for Real Madrid. I mean, I think after this year, I mean, Monaco will be in the Champions League, obviously. So, I mean, he'll have Champions League football. He'll be in a top club, one of the greatest, one of the highest played players in the world.
No taxes, tax free
money. I don't see him. I don't think this is something that's going to affect him very much and have him trying to come to Real Madrid. I mean, Real Madrid needs to worry about getting Bale. Getting Bale fit and playing before they worry about what Falcao is doing in Monaco. I think it's just a ploy to try to put that out there and get him thinking about it.
And Falcao's, his response when he was asked about it today, I believe, in fact, he said, "I'm very happy at Monaco. This is not the time to talk about Real Madrid's potential interest in me out of respect for my current club." So we will see. We'll watch this space to see if another Galactico joins Real Madrid. But, you know, in saying that, they bought Bale and let go, you know, Mesut Ozil.
Yeah.
Look, what a terrible decision that was. So who knows? They might sign Falcao and let Casillas go, who's arguably been the best goalkeeper for 20-odd years. So who knows? They seem to be getting rid of some decent players there. But speaking of Real Madrid, we're going to La Liga. This week, or I guess the weekend, Saturday evening saw Barcelona's 100% start to the Premier Division ended as they were held 0-0 at Osasuna. The Catalan Giants opted to rest several first-team players. Ahead of today's Champions League game against AC Milan, Messi was on the bench recovering from a thigh injury that didn't really show its face today.
Absolutely not.
Gerard Piqué, Dani Alves, and Alexis Sanchez weren't included. Barca not winning doesn't matter. They didn't really they didn't lose, did they?
Yeah, they're still the class of the class of La Liga right now. I mean, it wasn't an issue of possession. They were just a little wasteful in front of goal.
Yeah.
I know you're probably smiling on the inside seeing that Neymar couldn't carry them to victory with all the stars aligned.
I was actually very disappointed that my favorite player Neymar didn't score. No, I enjoyed it. My face wasn't rubbed in the mud this week. Lucky for Barca, their nearest rivals for the title so far this season, Atletico Madrid, were beaten by Barcelona's neighbours, Espanyol, 1-0. Barca remained top with 25 points, 1 point clear of Atletico, whilst Real Madrid are now 3 points behind. As Cristiano Ronaldo converted a stoppage time penalty won by Gareth Bale to seal a 2-0 victory against Malaga. So Real Madrid getting two more points closer to Barcelona. La Liga still open? Still those three teams?
I don't know if I've still seen a Real Madrid team that can beat a Real Madrid that can beat a healthy Barcelona team, and that's
you know what this weekend is? It's the Clásico. The first one of the season. The first of like 10 we'll probably see this season. No, I joke.
It does seem like they play each other like 5 or 6 times a year.
Can I have we have like a weekly rant where I seem to go off on a certain issue? But you know, I find it very difficult, and this is to Barcelona and Real Madrid fans, I find it very difficult to get excited for these Clásicos at times because they play each other twice in the league, and then you figure they pretty much play each other twice in the cup competition. I mean, so you play 4 Clásicos. Okay, 4 games is not very many in a season. But that's what they do in the Scottish Premier League. Celtic and Rangers or whatever, Celtic and Motherwell play each other like 4 times a season. Like, it's kind of boring, you know. And like most, you know, when it was Mourinho and Guardiola, there was fights all over the pitch. There was red cards. But yeah, after the first game, some beautiful play and some fighting and that kind of thing. It's kind of interesting. But when you see that four times a season, you're just like, the diving around, I can't stand it. That's my rant out the way. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
But tell us how you really feel.
I know, sorry. But it should be a good game. Yeah. I mean, and very important game, obviously, for, I would think, for Real Madrid. I mean, if a defeat for Real Madrid was going to be very difficult for them to come back, even at this early stage. I mean, Barcelona aren't really going to lose that many games this season, yeah. We wouldn't think.
So. Oh, no, not at all.
Not at all, right?
They might lose two max.
Two max, right?
I think.
I know, we'll see. On to the Bundesliga and Germany. Bayern Munich battled from a goal down to beat Mainz 4-1 on Saturday and moved back to the top of the Bundesliga standings. Bayern went into the second half with that goal against them, but Robin, Müller with two, and Mandzukic with the goals. The win sees Bayern unbeaten for 34 games. Quite an astonishing record.
Yeah.
And they just look immense. Seem to be doing well under Pep.
Guardiola. Yeah, but I mean, Pep's got him firing on all cylinders at this time. There's no drop-off in play. I mean, two draws, seven wins.
Yeah.
Goal differential, 15. That's great, especially in a transition period with a new coach. I mean, we see teams in the Premier League are struggling with the transition. That's your favorites, Man U.
And,
Chelsea started slow. City's inconsistent.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, especially in transition, that's an impressive record.
Yeah, yeah.
Seven wins, two draws.
Yeah, absolutely. And a Marco Reus penalty in the fourth minute was enough to earn Borussia Dortmund all 3 points against Hanover, also on Saturday afternoon. Bayern remained top with 23 points, I believe, from their nine games, while Dortmund are just 1 point behind. And, I mean, we're going to get onto Lewandowski later, and he's keeping Dortmund relatively close, proximity to Bayern.
Yeah, absolutely. Goal differential the same. And Leverkusen, still their same record as Dortmund, but they're behind in goal differential by 4 points. So. Yeah.
And we'll talk about, obviously, another huge, you mentioned Leverkusen, another big team in Germany, Schalke. We'll talk about them when we get into our Champions League segment. We're going to take a quick break, mini break, and we're going to come back, talk about, let me see this. We're talking about the World Cup qualifying. We're talking about today's Champions League. We might have a look at Wednesday's Champions League games. And we talk about the greatest manager of all time, Sir Alex Ferguson's autobiography. It's coming out on Thursday. Huge media. We'll talk about it. It's coming up after the break. Go for it.
Saborío, Costa Rica retrocede, balón de Estados Unidos, tres cuartos de cancha, atención con el centro, Estados Unidos, gol, 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 gol de Estados Unidos, we love you forever and ever, ah, God bless America, doctor, Estados Unidos nos mete la reclasificación. Estados Unidos, ustedes no, ustedes los que están de verde no.
I don't know what quite to say after that. That's the first time I heard it was today as we're doing the show. First of all, Gio, can you give me a translation of exactly what that enthusiastic Mexican commentator was saying there?
Well, pretty much, I think it was in broadcast in Mexico on the soccer. They have both soccer games going on. Half a screen showing the U.S. game and the other half showing Mexico. They're playing at the same time.
And this guy's, he's commentating on the U.S. game.
They have both of them going on at the same time. So they have a split screen. And Mexico's losing. U.S. scores not one, but two goals with like 2 minutes, 1 minute, two left. Is that right, Wes?
90th minute.
That was the 90th minute and 94th minute or something like that. 89th and 94th minute.
Yeah, I mean, just some crazy. So that allowed Mexico to obviously fight for its life on a game coming up with
New Zealand in the playoff.
Yeah. So pretty much he's pissed. Everybody in Mexico is pissed. And he just thanks the Americans and God bless America. And then he goes on a 10-minute rant live on air, just pretty much saying how, you know, the Mexican soccer team sucks and how they're full of pride and they do nothing for the country and how ashamed he is for them. And it's just hilarious. But it went viral because he thanks America, and, you know. And
God bless America.
We have Donovan, of course, saying, you know, giving us his peace of mind, right?
What did Donovan say? It's my favorite American player, Donovan.
I mean, he just basically said that Mexico wouldn't have fought to make sure that the United States had made it into the World Cup.
Okay, I think that's a bit... Yeah, but do you think when that game's going on... That was Panama, right? Panama-USA, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't think the US in the last minute were thinking, well, let's get two goals here to help the Mexicans, you know, have a chance to qualify. I don't think that was going through their head. So don't know whether he should play the... Maybe I'm just hating on Landon Donovan.
I mean...
Do you get where I'm coming from?
I mean, I get what you're saying. I just don't know... I mean, the Americans just could have... I mean, they were qualified. They could have just let
they
Panama...
Could've.
I mean, they could have... I mean, basically, they made sure that Panama didn't go.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they could have just laid down and let Panama, you know, go to the world, have a shot at the World Cup, and they didn't do that, so...
There's a lot of money.
Yeah. There's also... Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was political or anything like that, but I mean... Mm. But he's right. There's not a lot of people, a lot of teams that probably would have continued to play as hard...
Yeah,
even if they
I can understand
when they could
that.
Have lost, especially against your rival, though.
I can understand that, but at the same time, these are professional players, so they got to do their job. So they got to go to the last minute, and Donovan's basically hinting at the way I read to it as a Donovan hater. Of course, the way I read it is him saying, "Well, yeah, in the last minute we fought for Mexico, but they wouldn't do it for us." Now, fuck off, Donovan. That's not true. That's not. And don't edit that, dude. That's not true, though, is it? Yeah. But that isn't true.
I don't.
Do you think one player on the pitch was thinking, yeah, we got to get these two goals to help our neighbor Mexico qualify? Not a chance!
Probably not. But, I mean, because they weren't aware. I don't. Since it was simultaneous, they played the game simultaneously, they weren't aware of the situation with Mexico, but they know that if they did win, it would be better for Mexico. I don't know if that's why they did it. I don't know. I mean, they just were playing soccer, and the guys wanted to win. And I mean, those guys are out there fighting for their spot on the World Cup team as well. No team is settled for the most part, and everybody's still fighting for their spot. So
exactly, people are fighting to get in the squad.
Yeah,
stuff like that.
And that's. I mean, it's probably more a result of that. But you know, it's a rivalry. That's a rivalry dig. That's something you say in a rivalry.
Yeah,
like that's what rivals say. They say they take things and use them as ammunition. So. Right. Here's to the U.S. and Mexico meeting somewhere in the World Cup.
We'll see what happens. Obviously, I did mention it. The playoff, Mexico still can qualify for the World Cup. They play against New Zealand in the playoff to see who will make it. I hope Mexico make it because they're a better team than New Zealand in general, and you want the best teams there. Just saying. And they have great fans. But yeah. I do love New Zealand. Talk about World Cup qualifying. 7 teams from Europe have qualified since we last spoke about World Cup qualifying. Belgium,
yes,
who I think we all agree have got a great shot at winning stuff, or at least winning this game. Most of the players are young. They get to the next European Championships 2016 in France. 2018 in Russia. We could see. But Belgium, Switzerland, obviously Germany must go in one of the top two favorites for this competition.
Right.
Russia, Bosnia-Herzegovina make their first World Cup since their independence. Absolutely fantastic story. England, thank God, made it. We'll talk about that in a second.
Wait, yes, were you really worried about England not making it?
Oh, I was, bro. You have no... absolutely. We had... Yeah, when Callum was on the show... And he was talking about, when I told, you know, I was telling people how shit England are. And he was saying, yeah, you know, they have been disappointing. He had a bit more faith than I did.
Absolutely.
But, you know, any England fan, you know, you ask them honestly over the last God knows how many years. England make real, I was telling, my roommate, Adrian. He's like, hey, you have poor, you know, pretty much poor standards for England. And I was like, you look at the teams that are in, England will be with Macedonia, Azerbaijan, like... With all due respect, teams England should absolutely destroy. But boy, do England make tough work. Like, Christ, you could play a pub team and make them look world class. Like, England are very, like, poor. However, I'm pleased because the two games that they played last week, especially the early 15, 20 minutes against Poland, who obviously had Lewandowski.
Yeah.
And Blazikowski, I like to pronounce his name. England looked phenomenal. So good. Andros Townsend, great player. And I think he's... So Andros Townsend, I think, is... Oh, I don't want to get his age wrong, but I think he's 21, 22.
Right.
And he was on loan at 9 different clubs over the last 4 seasons. 9 teams. Can you imagine? Like, this is just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, for somebody that young. Exactly. But it also, I mean, it speaks to his talent level, too. Yeah. A lot of people thinking that he can come in and make an instant impact, so.
Yeah, but he looked fantastic. Rooney looked on song. Our favorite on the pod, Daniel Sturridge, looked good. Welbeck looked very accomplished in an England shirt. Wilshere was coming off the bench, obviously niggling injuries. I still don't like Michael Carrick. But, you know, there's a lot of positives with England. And they do have 2 of the best left-backs in the world in the same squad. So they have a chance. They have a chance. And they'll be in the World Cup, which would have been a disgrace if they hadn't. As I was saying, Spain qualified. Italy, the Netherlands had already qualified from the UEFA part of the World Cup qualification. They qualified back in September. What are some of the European playoffs you were telling me about? Exciting playoffs.
You got Ukraine and France.
Who's gonna win that one?
I think it's probably gonna be France.
France?
I don't see France not making it.
But they have in World Cups and European Championships. They've failed to perform. I mean, recently, but you should beat Ukraine.
I mean, they should beat the Ukraine. I mean, you were worried about England beating the Ukraine, but I think France will beat Ukraine. Croatia, Iceland.
Who's gonna win? Idegger Johnson doesn't still play for Iceland, does he? I don't think so.
I think so. I'm going to go with Croatia.
I'm going to go with Croatia, too.
Then we got Greece and Romania. I guess I go with Greece.
Pick your whipping boys for the World Cup is basically what that is, right? Unless Greece pull a 2004 and win won the European Championship.
Yeah, and go nuts. And then there's the matchup of all matchups with all the marbles on the line. Portugal versus Sweden.
So you're saying we're going to have a World Cup without either Cristiano Ronaldo or what you said earlier on this podcast, the best striker in the world, Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Who do you really... What did your heart tell you? What did your head tell you?
My heart tells me that Portugal probably has the overall better team, but Sweden's going.
You think Sweden's going?
I think Zlatan's going to step up and put on a masterclass. I think it's going to be a high-scoring affair, something like 4-2.
Yeah.
Or 4-3. I think Sweden's going to do it and Portugal's going to be sent home.
We're not forgetting about
Cristiano Ronaldo, but I think there's something about Zlatan and his attitude and his demeanor and the way his team, just like, the way he just shows up sometimes and just like...
Destiny.
This is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I don't get that from Cristiano Ronaldo all the time. I get that he has as much skill and talent as speed and creativity is any player in the world. I get that, but it's something about...
You think when push comes to shove,
some players just have that panache, that champion in them.
Yeah,
and I don't see that in Cristiano Ronaldo. I just see a super talented individual, but there's something like an attitude that Zlatan has that's just like, I'm gonna put this team on my back and I'm gonna carry you and we're gonna win.
That's the end of it. I do slightly disagree in terms of Ronaldo's, I guess, a big game player, but what I will agree with you on is I think if you're in the trenches in a game, Zlatan Ibrahimovic is more likely going to look around to his teammates and like inspire them than Cristiano Ronaldo's pathetic, you didn't give me the ball right type of attitude, which he does absolutely have. You see him whining on the field, doing his expressions, you know, very expressive person, whereas I feel like Zlatan has that bit more of a leader about him, I think, than perhaps Ronaldo does. Who do you want to go through quickly?
I personally want Sweden.
Yes.
But I think it probably would be better for the world and everybody else if Portugal went in. I mean,
I agree, yeah. I agree. I hope Sweden make it then.
Yeah.
I hope Sweden make it. Help England's chances. I think England. Well, I don't know. Zlatan's 3 goals last time they played England.
Yeah.
But I'd rather play Sweden than Portugal. 3 teams from South America, Ecuador, Chile, Colombia, all joined Brazil as hosts and Argentina, who qualified also last month. Fantastic to see Colombia. Obviously, we mentioned Falcao earlier. Have some great players. Chile have Arturo Vidal, fantastic player, obviously, for Juventus. I mean, Ecuador have Antonio Valencia, and you know, so we'll see what happens really in terms of those teams in the World Cup, but they'll be competitive.
Absolutely.
They'll be especially in a World Cup in South America.
In South America, they'll be so biting at the bit to show and perform.
Yeah, they
on
will.
Their home continent.
One team from CONCACAF made it through the North American qualification groups. Honduras have joined the USA and Costa Rica for next year's World Cup. Obviously, we mentioned Mexico having to play New Zealand, who won the Oceanic Federation, Football Confederation. They won it, but because, you know, who did New Zealand play? They play like Samoa and, you know, like tiny islands, like, you know, so they, because Australia doesn't play in the Oceanic anymore.
Who was the team that was in the CONCACAF?
Oh, you're talking about Tahiti.
Tahiti, there
in
it
the
is.
Confederations Cup. Yes,
that's
yeah.
who it was.
Tahiti will not be at the World Cup. I can guarantee you that one. Five teams the five teams from the Asian Confederation.
Okay.
Is Australia who have joined that part. They left the Oceanic Federation I think last year. Australia, Iran, Japan,
Korea.
South Korea. Okay. Yeah, all qualified from the Asian Football Confederation. And then in Africa, no teams have qualified yet. They all play a playoff. The first legs have already happened. And in the first legs, now remember, if you win your tie over two games, you qualify. So it's not like a round robin system till the end. Ghana beat Egypt 3-1. So as we were saying before this section, that means Ghana's going to the World Cup. Nigeria leading their tie, they beat Ethiopia 2-1. You'd expect Nigeria.
Yeah.
But I'd love Ethiopia to be there. It'd be fantastic to have them in the World Cup. Ivory Coast or Cote d'Ivoire, 3-1 over Senegal. Yeah, you'd expect that again.
Yeah.
Long gone are the days of Senegal beating France in the World Cup. El Hadji Diouf introduces himself to the world. Burkina Faso are 3-2 up against Algeria. I bloody hope Burkina Faso make it, because Algeria was so good. That I'm haunted by the... I was in South Africa when England played Algeria, and it had to be the most boring game of football I've ever seen in my life. So hopefully we get a fresh team, Burkina Faso, and make it.
How did England perform in that match?
Oh, God, England always performed badly at tournaments. It was so bad. And to think the next game, we let in that stupid goal against USA where Robert Green let it spill over the line. So we had all the, sorry, American fans, going crazy as if drawing with England was some great achievement, which really it isn't. And then England have a horrible Algerian game, and then remember the goal from Frank Lampard that was not given against Germany. That's how England's tournament went in South Africa. It was terrible. It sucked. And Tunisia and Cameroon with a 0-0 scoreline in their first leg. The second legs are going to be played on the 16th, 17th, and 19th of November. We will keep you updated on what actually happens. So if Egypt managed to turn around a 6-1 scoreline, we will tell you. But I doubt it. Don't put any bets on it.
Yeah, it's funny because I think Egypt went undefeated.
The whole qualification game. And then
they
lost.
Group, yeah, and then they get throttled 6-1.
6-1. Leaving the World Cup, the supposed greatest international competition, which is actually debated by some people, we go on to the greatest club competition, some would argue, the Champions League. Which just happened earlier today. Robert Lewandowski's late winner for Borussia Dortmund at the Emirates ended Arsenal's flawless start to their Champions League campaign and threw Group F wide open. After scoring 34 goals last season, Lewandowski's strike against Arsenal was his 10th this season so far, so pretty great record so far. Arsenal, Dortmund and Napoli are all now on 6 points from their three games. Marseille, the fourth member of that group, were beaten by Napoli today, and they're pretty much dead and buried.
Yeah,
they
dead and buried.
Probably won't even make the Europa League now.
Arsenal, they gave up a late goal, but they played really, really well. I thought they played well.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just a battle in the midfield. Nobody could really, really get on track or dominate the game. And Arsenal more than held their own into the late goal.
Yeah, coming into the game, Wenger had said...
Lewandowski.
Yeah, Wenger had said Arsenal a much better team than when they last played Dortmund. And it's certainly shown it. Ozil, again, such a big game. He's such a big game player. I was watching the game, and there's a Real Madrid fan next to me, and I was like, yes, your boys made a huge mistake getting rid of Ozil. Looked great. And obviously motivated against a German team.
Yeah.
Who's going through in that group? Quick prediction. I know we're halfway through the group now.
I'm going to say Arsenal and Dortmund.
I agree. I think, well, Napoli, obviously, we talked about losing to Roma. Yeah, I think Dortmund and Arsenal are gonna do it. Fernando Torres marked his 100th Chelsea start with 2 goals with an impressive win at Schalke to go top of Group E. Eden Hazard with the 3rd for Chelsea. Tell me about it, Wes.
Nando on the brace. I watched the game, and obviously, I mean, the scoreline says Chelsea dominated.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get adjusted to the way they play. I believe all three goals were counterattacking goals, which is, it's like we're always playing back, always playing defense. They had Azpilicueta playing left back, which was a little odd because he always plays right back. He backs up Ivanovic, but Cole's hurt. I guess they're racing.
Where's Bertrand?
They're resting. I guess he was resting Bertrand.
Because he did play, I think, Bertrand at the weekend, didn't he?
Yeah, he did play at the weekend, and then he's going to play against City. So Azpilicueta was playing on the left, and Schürrle is, like you said earlier, he played phenomenally covering for Azpilicueta because they were I think it's the right back from Schalke, I think he's from Korea. Mm-hmm. It was just running up and down that flank and coming after him and getting by him several times. But it's just, it's tough for me because we're playing this counterattacking style. It's so much different than what we did last year.
Yeah.
But when Hazard and Oscar and Sherlock get on the gas heading the other direction, I mean, they're pretty much impossible to catch and stop.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just so skillful. So it's working and they're starting to click. So, and once again, I mean, they're what Mata didn't play.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they were resting him for the weekend.
For the weekend, yeah. Huge, obviously a massive, massive game, Manchester City on Sunday. Chelsea leapfrogged Schalke to the top of the group on 6 points, only on goal difference. Basel and Steaua Bucharest drew 1-1. Basel move up to 4 points, while Steaua Bucharest got their first point of the campaign with that draw. I guess we're going to say Chelsea and Schalke are going to go through.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're going to say and Basel go to the Europa League again. Quick thing, two more Champions League. Have to mention Celtic recorded a crucial and highly deserved first win of the Champions League group stage to move above Ajax in the group of death. Remember, Milan and Barcelona are both in this group as well. Milan and Barca drew 1-1 at the San Siro. Robinho with the goal for Milan, and then Messi with the goal for Barcelona, quite predictably for Barcelona.
I was happy to see Robinho get a goal.
You were?
I love Robinho.
I bet you he was ecstatic to score against Barcelona considering he used to play for Real Madrid.
Yes, but you did say it's the group of death. I don't think
it is. Yeah, it's a very tough group. Barcelona remain top on 7 points, Milan on 5, Celtic now have 3 points, and Ajax with just 1 point. Without naming Barcelona, who's the other team going through in this group?
AC Milan.
You think Celtic might push on? No?
We got Rubinho.
Oh, my God. I'm surprised he still plays in Europe. Back in Brazil.
Yeah,
with Patu and all these other players. Alexander, now, before Porto played Atletico Madrid. Porto played Zenit St. Petersburg. And before the game, the talk was about Hulk and how he said he wasn't going to celebrate if he scored against Porto. He didn't score. Alexander Kershakov scored their winner with just 4 minutes remaining as Zenit overcame 10 men Porto in Group G. The other game in the group, Atletico Madrid beat Austria Vienna 3-0 to make it 3 wins out of 3. Zenit are now in second with 4 points with that win over Porto. Quick note on this Kershakov. Yes, this guy missed so many chances in the Euros last 2012, yeah, last year. Oof. Jeez, I'm surprised he scored. Couldn't hit a barn door in the European Championship. Like this guy, if anyone can remember, please write on the Facebook group. Because this guy, I remember one game he had about, no exaggeration, he must have had about 10 shots and not one was on target. And they were like, he was in the box. Like it was like unbelievable, wasteful. But he was hardworking, but wouldn't trust him to score. Who's qualifying from this group then? If Atletico Madrid, 9 points after three games. Zenit with four. Or Porto.
I'm trying to remember who I predict.
Oh, Austria Vienna. I don't think Austria Vienna can make it. We think Atletico surely.
And Zenit.
Atletico and Zenit?
Yeah.
Safe to say.
I want to think I said Porto in the original predictions. We're going to make a slight adjustment to that. Bring out the old eraser and go ahead and pencil in Zenit. And that's where to go for that one.
Absolutely. And then this last segment is dedicated to a very special book that comes out tomorrow's Thursday. No, tomorrow's Wednesday. On Thursday, the Alex Ferguson book comes out. His autobiography, obviously written by him.
Isn't it titled My Autobiography?
It is, yeah. It's called Alex Ferguson, My Autobiography. And no sir involved, which was, I thought it was quite nice. Paul Hayward, who I believe is from the Daily Telegraph, a really, really good journalist, read a lot of his stuff, listened to him as well. He co-wrote the book with Ferguson. A few quotes I'm going to put at you, Wes, and you tell me what you think. Okay?
Okay. Let's go.
Okay.
For it.
So Alex Ferguson, now basically, let me tell people. So the book comes out on Thursday, but today there was a press conference with the world media. I remember questions were being asked from Australian people, from Italian people. You know, Ferguson was asked who his favorite Italian player of all time was, such and such. Like, Paolo Maldini was his answer, who actually was a fantastic left back.
Before we get too deep in it, what do you think about the timing of that press
conference? Okay, fantastic. This is what I was going to ask
you. Okay. Oh, you're going to ask me that.
I was going to ask you that.
Okay.
What's your view on it? And then I'll give my view. Your view.
It could have waited. I think it could have waited at least
okay.
until, I mean.
Yeah, you're saying.
I think the timing, it was a little bad the day before the Manchester United game. In Champions League, the team's struggling a bit. I think the time he could have worked out the timing just a little bit better. I mean, he could have moved it maybe 2 days later.
Can I rebuff this thing? Because I agree with you.
Part of me is kind of like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
part of me is just like, you know, this is totally different. This is Arsene Wenger. This is Alex Ferguson's thing. It's not necessarily Manchester United thing. It's about him and what he's doing.
Post.
And so he should be able to do it whenever, and it shouldn't really affect what's going on in the pitch. But at the same time, he has such a great influence over Manchester United, over Moyes, over the team, over the players still, that it's going to have an effect. Yeah. And so he could have taken that into consideration, but he didn't necessarily have to, and I'm not mad or upset that he did do it.
Yeah.
But it's just like, maybe could have done it differently. But it shouldn't. I mean, they're professionals. They should be able to go out and they should play. And so I guess I'm kind of on the fence on that one, right?
Yeah, a little bit. But I think you're right.
There's just valid arguments for both.
Yeah, exactly. And people say, look, Ferguson's gone. He's no longer the manager. But look, I mean, his whole book, from what I've heard, and I'm obviously going to get the book, is about control and power. And for, 27 years at Manchester United, he was the main. He says the manager of Manchester United has to control everything. So if you've been in control for 27 years, Sir Alex Ferguson, for all intents and purposes, is Manchester United. You know, he's still such a powerful figure. And I think you're right. You know, the two are entwined. And especially he only left in May or July 1st when David Moyes took the job. So it's, but the timing thing. Here's my, because people have been criticizing the timing of it. Well, look, this is his autobiography. Now, you can question, well, maybe he should make his autobiography in a few years once the dust has settled. But he didn't. And he has no real input in the timing of the book coming out. I mean, this thing, with the publisher would have organized the book's coming out on this date, you can do this appearances. They organized that months ago. Months ago, who was to know that Manchester United would have won every, if they were playing like Arsenal on top of the league, it wouldn't be an issue.
Absolutely.
So there was no way Ferguson's going to know. You know, you could predict, obviously, we all thought transition, all that kind of thing, but there's no way to know Manchester United would be eighth,
absolutely.
You know?
Right.
Well, anyway. I think we're both on the fence on what really could have been done.
I mean, it's not horrible timing.
Yeah.
But
it's just
know.
Unhelpful.
It's unhelpful. There you go. It's very it's unhelpful.
here's some quotes, and you tell me what you think. So Sir Alex Ferguson wrote, these are direct quotes from his autobiography. He said, Wayne Rooney is not the quickest learner. And claims that, which is, I thought, another way of saying you're an idiot. So Wayne Rooney is not the quickest learner and claims that the striker had to be dropped after a drinking incident 2 years ago and was not fit enough to last even a full game last season. Now, is such a comment. Now, he has also spoken about, yes, the Rooney didn't put an official transfer request in, because if you do that, you lose your bonuses, your sign, maybe what do you call it, a loyalty bonus that you're due if you ask to leave. So Ferguson's story is, he just came to me and said, look, I want to leave. It was no written transfer request. But this Rooney thing, I mean, it seems their relationship is still pretty fractured. I mean, what a thing to say, not the quickest learner?
I'm trying to remember. There's a story about Rooney in that the way he learned to play soccer was different. It was more of like a visualization.
Really?
Of things that he could do on the pitch. Mm. It wasn't like he learned, like, it was unconventional the way he learned how to play soccer. And I wish I could remember where I read that. But the way he learned isn't like the tactical way that people would normally. It was more like he would envision what he thought he could do or what he could do on the pitch. And he would do that in his mind over and over and over and over again. And then he would use those types of things on the field in a game situation. Yeah. But it was more like a mental preparation as opposed to people explaining tactics and him learning tactics and playing that way.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes sense if he grew up.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't the nicest way to say it, but I'm about 95% sure that Wayne Rooney learned how to play soccer differently than most kids did, but it was more of a visualization type thing. And then he was so much more talented than all the kids that he played against that they didn't really take him away from that.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he got to higher up in United, that's when that issue probably surfaced with Ferguson and him not being the quickest learner, because he was more talented than everybody else.
Yeah. Like, or at least he was let to learn his own way.
His own way.
Yeah.
And since he was so more mature talented, people didn't change the way he learned, the way he played, or the way he was coached. And that, I think that those gifts, when people have those extraordinary gifts like that and they're allowed to do the things they want, they don't necessarily work on all the other things that other kids work on. That's where your fitness issue would come in, stuff like that.
Learning in itself is a skill, skill to learn.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, we all know that for going to college. I mean, it's a skill to study and know how to study and that kind of
thing. And some people are successful in college without even studying at all. And some people have to study immensely,
Another quote, for any Manchester United fan, any long-term soccer fan, Roy Keane's name strikes up the various images. That one of the quote was, the hardest part of Roy Keane's body is his tongue. And he has the most savage tongue you can imagine.
I mean,
that's pretty strong words. I mean, from a former captain. If people don't know, Roy Keane captained Manchester United for many years. Manchester United bought him off Nottingham Forest. And he was fantastic. But within very short period, he just left. He was sold. He was got rid of. But, I mean, he was very... on the field, he was a hard man.
I mean, I guess if you're speaking of power, that's probably something that would cause conflict between him and Ferguson if he's got a sharp tongue. And that's the most hard part for him to deal with. I don't think Ferguson would keep him around very long either, especially if it was causing conflict on the team and things of that nature. And conflict between him and him, from Ferguson's personality, that doesn't seem like something that would fly with him. No matter what your talent level or skill level was, he would not put you above himself.
Absolutely. Next quote. David Beckham was the only player I managed who chose to be famous, who made it his mission to be known outside of the game. He did speak in glowing terms in various interviews about David Beckham. But he said that quote, and then he also said marrying Victoria Beckham, or I think he's even quoted as saying, marrying the Spice Girl changed everything. David Beckham's, you know... We didn't want to sell him. I wanted him to be there with Scholes and gigs, and then we had to get rid of him. Sold him to Real Madrid, and he's like, I can't believe he went to LA Galaxy. He kind of berates that idea. But that's it. I wouldn't know. I would have thought other players, I think more commonly that's going to happen, other players want to be famous for outside of the game. I mean, whether it's a fashion deal or something, I would have thought.
I mean, if you think about it, he's like the player that did that.
Yeah, Or like, at least in the modern era, I'm sure.
Yeah, in the modern era. Yeah. I mean, there was like some other players, but nobody that was already rated as high of a player as him made like broad steps.
Yeah.
I mean, people have a Nike deal. They do some stuff with Nike, but he like had his shoe deal and then was like on runways like doing.
He's half naked and like an Armani billboard in New York type of shit. Yeah.
Yeah, doing like Calvin Klein stuff. Yeah, Calvin Klein. These different things. You know what I mean? He honestly made a separate career. Yeah. Like he had two different careers. He had his soccer career and then he had his pop career, which involved modeling and being the Spice Girls husband.
Funny thing about David Beckham today. So Gia was talking about split screens earlier. When I was watching the Arsenal Dortmund game, on the other screen was is it Los Angeles Kings? I believe it's the hockey team in LA.
And Kings.
David Beckham was in the crowd with Victoria and the kids. And literally, I don't know if this just happened, but as Dortmund scored, Lewandowski scored the winner, about 30 seconds later, this woman goes up to David Beckham, whispers in his ear, and he just smiles. And I was like, oh, it'd be hilarious if he was told that Arsenal had lost, and he was just smiling about it. I was loving it. Yes, Bex. Okay, next one. Cristiano Ronaldo was the most gifted player I managed. He surpassed all other great ones I coached at United, and I had many. Pretty strong praise there. He had a lot of great players.
Yeah, but I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo, talent-wise, as great as any that have come through the ranks.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, it's high praise, but it's not...
It shouldn't be surprising.
It's not surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just... Talent is above and beyond most. Yeah. I mean, he's just... The skill he has plus the physicality he has is just beyond about anybody.
Absolutely.
I can't think of anybody else that has a combination of both.
Here's one quite close to. Well, this, I'm going to have two close to your heart. Fernando Torres. Sir Alex Ferguson said Torres was blessed with great cunning, a shrewdness that was borderline Machiavellian. He had a touch of evil, though not in the physical sense. I mean, what do you think that means? I'm trying to get my head around that one. He was blessed with great cunning and a shrewdness that was borderline Machiavellian. He had a touch of evil, though not in the physical sense.
Well, he says not in the physical I think he's when he says not in the physical sense, he means not like necessarily dirty. But if you watch Fernando Torres play the way he kind of, when he's not, before he misses a goal, an open net, he has this like way he walks and kind of moves. And it's kind of like he just believes that he's just it.
Yeah.
Even like when he got the red card, was that 2 weeks ago? And he like pushes the guy in the like grabs the dude by the face. And he's not even like with the look on his face. It's not even like I'm mad at you. I want to fight. It's like a little smirk, like nobody, and just like smashes his face in. I can kind of see that. He just has this aura about himself that it doesn't always translate into goals. And I don't know if it's like a pseudo confidence or just the way that he carries himself, but. Fernando has this way about just the way he looks and moves. It's not aloof. It's just like it's a confidence that doesn't translate into goals right now. Yeah. I don't know if it's like what he's always done to pump himself up or to be that striker that he was like at Liverpool, and that just, he just continues that, and that's just the way he is. Or I don't know. It's just, but I can see what he's saying. You can, if you watch his mannerisms, his face, the way he looks at people, he's just kind of like he's above it all.
From Torres looking somewhat evil. What about this one on Frank Lampard? I didn't think of him as an elite international footballer. I mean, is that quite shocking from arguably the greatest manager of all time saying about? I mean, someone, you know, even the hardcore Chelsea haters wouldn't, or West Ham's haters for that matter, wouldn't. Really bash Lampard in that way, would they? I mean, there have been. Now, here's the thing. When he's elite international footballer,
is he just speaking for playing for England?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's where you kind of have to read in between the lines. Because if he was saying for England, then I agree
with that.
Shall I read you the next one? This is on Steven Gerrard.
Well, let's go ahead. Let's stick with Lampard for a second, because.
I didn't think of him as an elite international
footballer. The thing about Lampard is he...
Do you think if he was Spanish, he would get a bit more credit than being... Maybe English people would just think they're very dogged and hardworking rather than charismatic and...
Was that Xavi? I mean, Xavi had a quote about somebody, and I'm trying to think who he quoted.
Yeah, he was quoting Paul Scholes.
Well, he was talking about that was Xavi on Paul Scholes. The thing about Lampard is he scores goals. That's what he does. Is he the great? Does he handle? Does he make all the great passes? No, not necessarily. He works hard and he scores goals. Is he just the most talented player out there?
Yeah,
not necessarily, but he definitely like that. He has that first touch and he has a knack for scoring goals. I mean, I think he scored. I mean, I think Gerrard just scored 100 goals. And Lampard scored 200. I mean, that's just what he does well. I mean,
I think
he doesn't overwhelm you with anything else, but he scores goals as a midfielder. I mean, he should have probably been a striker,
yeah,
or something like that. I mean, because he's not a great creator of opportunities for others. But I mean, he's not elite in that sense. But it's hard to say that because he scores so many goals.
Yeah, yeah.
He's done it for years and years and years.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. On Steven Gerrard.
Fergie, I'm trying.
On Steven Gerrard, I am one of the few who felt Gerrard was not a top player. You don't have to back up Fergie just because I'm a man.
No, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't do that. I'm just trying to be independent and think separately. I mean, I've never thought that Steven Gerrard was just the top great. Absolutely great. Like, absolutely, like that game-changing player. I mean, he's worked through some injuries and stuff, and maybe...
Yeah, but Liverpool fans would remember the times where he lifted Liverpool to win the Champions League when they were 3-0 down at halftime against Milan. And I would say Gerrard's more of an elite player than Frank Lampard, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, I am jaded in looking at what he's done in the last 3 to 5 years as opposed to prior to that.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody, you know, short memories and stuff, we forget about stuff.
In my perspective, in the past 5 years, he's not been
I think Gerrard hasn't been
right
as well.
And so what is he right now? Third?
Who, Gerrard? Gerrard's got to be 30. Him and Lampard, same era. It's got to be like 35, something 35, like that.
So,
33,
I mean,
maybe?
Yeah, so a lot of the time where he was that exceptional player, I wasn't watching as much.
Yeah,
it's hard for me to kind of say, but from what I've seen in the past like three to 6 years, no, he isn't elite.
Definitely not. And I think a lot of the elite players have a career where you look at someone like Pirlo, who's 34 or whatever, and still growing strong, still doing. Gerrard maybe slightly dipped, gone downhill. So maybe.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a lot of injuries too.
This one's about a guy close to my heart, Ruud van Nistelrooy, who I, growing up, outside of Eric Cantona, Ruud van Nistelrooy was just exceptionally good for Manchester United. Apparently, he said to Ferguson, in an argument, he said, "You fuck." And then Ferguson says, "I always remember that. I couldn't believe it." Which is quite funny, but I guess to a manager in a professional setting, that is quite harsh to say, I guess. "I couldn't believe it. The other players were telling him, 'Behave yourself.' That was the end of him. I knew we would never get him back." I guess that's an illustration, much like the that Fergie, I guess, known for, if you're a Man U fan, of getting rid of a key player at their peak of their powers, or just when you see that plateau or maybe a decline. Did it with Beckham, did it with Roy Keane, did it with Jaap Stam, did it with Ruud van Nistelrooy. But that shows you just... I knew we would never get him back. Just a very cutting. He saw something he didn't like. Maybe the player misbehaved or said something, and that was it.
Yeah,
he just crossed the line, and that was it. But I mean, exceptional manager. Got to read the book. There's tons of other stories. I could talk obviously forever about it. And we talked about whether it was helpful for Man U. Pretty much, sat on the fence a little bit about it.
It's probably not helpful, but. Yeah. It shouldn't be too big of a hindrance either, because nobody really has to... I mean, he spoke on some players. I mean, we haven't read the books. We don't know how deeply he talks about players that are currently...
Yeah, I mean, Wayne Rooney one is a bit... In terms of being at Man U right now.
Right. That could have some effect. I don't think it really will.
Two quick questions. What do you think about him lambasting, if that's too strong a word, Lampard and Gerrard? Because I was... All day when this came out, I was on Facebook and everything, and... What do you think about him lambasting Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard, but then leaving out someone like a Paul Scholes or a David Beckham? That is he saying that Scholes and Beckham were better players than Lampard, that he just didn't criticize them, or, you know, because they were Man U players? I mean, is that a bit unfair treatment for, or should we just not expect? I mean, he does criticize Beckham,
I think prior to the book, we had a better, we had a pretty decent understanding of how he felt about most Manchester United players. We didn't have the understanding of how he felt about players outside of Manchester United. We didn't know what he felt about Lampard. We didn't know what he felt about Giroud. You could already probably ascertain what his feelings were about Beckham. We knew that he thought that Beckham put fame above his career, and he split his capabilities between the two. I think he spoke to Scholes before as well about keep him in it. I mean, obviously him playing him for so long into his career. Obviously, we know how he felt about Giggs. I mean, he's kept Giggs, but he's 40 years old and he's still in the lineup. So, I mean, you could tell how he felt about those players. With Rooney, you could already kind of tell what their relationship had been.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was wrong for that. And I mean, from what I've from what you've said about the book and what I've read online, I like how Fergie hasn't really changed.
Yeah.
From his managerial style to how he presents his book, it seems like he's just straightforward. It's real direct, and this is how it is. And there's you have to admire that.
People
try to, you know, either sugarcoat something or add shock value. It seems the way he's presenting things and saying things, it's just right in line with what you would think.
Yeah.
And when you think about the statement versus your perceptions of Fergie prior to the book, it's right in line.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going to definitely read it.
Yeah, definitely. If someone wants to buy me a Christmas present. Now I'm going to buy it on Thursday. That's it for the pod. We got through a lot of stuff. Wes, tell us what we're doing next Sunday, where we're going to be, if people want to come say hi, or where we're going to be recording next Sunday for the show.
This coming week, we're going to meet up with the North Texas Blues. That's the Chelsea group for North Texas here. We're going to be with them for their big match, our big match against City.
Manchester City, Chelsea, Sunday?
Yeah.
11 a.m.
The game's at 11 a.m. We're going to be there at 10 a.m. At the Staggering Irishman.
In Addison.
It should be a great time. There's going to be a lot of Chelsea supporters. They're loud. They're raucous. They love their Blues. So we're going to have a good time. If you can, come out and join us. It'll be an awesome time.
It will be awesome. And hopefully, should be a great game, City and Chelsea. You know, from an Arsenal's fan perspective, battling for second and third place. but we'll see. I hope Chelsea win. Gio, thank you so much. I know we're all being late here. 10:45 p.m. on Tuesday evening. Thank you so much. Gio just came back from Vegas, by the way, so we're very jealous of him. And thank you, Weston.
Absolutely. I enjoy being here every time I can be.
Oh, and yes, we are recording live from the man cave or the pod or my apartment, depending on what you want to describe it as. That's a great plug. Facebook. Sorry, by the way, I have to put this out. I should have said it at the beginning of the show. Sorry, people that wanted to expecting us to have phone calls this week and stuff. We're holding that off till we have to get some things in order. That's when we're really going to have live callers and put that all set up for you guys. So be patient. Remember at the at On the Ball Show, On the Ball Soccer Podcast. That's the Facebook. Comment, say whatever you like. If you have the Ferguson book, I'd love to know what you have to say or on Roma or any other subjects we've talked about tonight. Thank you guys, and we're out. Boom.
Is this their moment?